to the Disney Magic Podcast. I'm Joel.
And I'm Megan.
We like to talk about Disney things. Specifically this week, we're going to be talking about The Emperor's New Groove, which is kind of based on The Emperor's New Clothes? Question mark?
The title's kind of based on The Emperor's New Clothes, but the rest of it not so much.
Like, that's the thing where it's like, because, you know, for the most part, Disney movies are all based on something until we get, like, the original ones. And then there's a lot of, like, oh, this is the first original Disney movie. We're like, Lion King was that. And even though you're like, Lion King's kind of Hamlet.
Lion King is Hamlet.
And so then, you know, you get Dinosaur, first original Disney movie. Like, Dinosaur's kind of Tarzan.
Yep.
So this one's like, they're like, it's based on this one. It's based on Emperor's New Clothes. And you're like, not really.
No, not
really. Kind
so
of totally
much.
Different.
Yeah. Nobody's naked, but, for one.
Nobody's naked in this movie.
Not that I remembered, anyway.
No. Nope. I was trying to think of, like, background here, but...
I was trying to think of kids.
This is a movie where somebody being naked would be a joke that really fits in this movie.
It's true, so I'm surprised.
I'm really surprised. Like, now that it occurs to me, I'm really surprised there's no naked people in this movie.
Yep, kind of
sad.
That's
a weird thing to say about a Disney movie, but it's true.
It's true.
Anyway, Emperor's New Groove came out December 15th, 2000. And has a long... long history of how it got onto your TV screen or your movie screen.
Yep.
And so here's the thing. Like, this is going to be a long thing because this is like way back when we were talking about crazy troubled productions.
Yeah.
Like, we got another one of those. And so I'm really curious. So the Sting, who did a lot of the music, part of the deal of him being involved in it is that his wife would be able to make a documentary about the production. And so she made this documentary about the production and captured all the turmoil going on making this movie. The documentary is called The Sweatbox. It was screened at the Toronto Film Festival in 2002 and has never been seen again, pretty much. Disney owns the rights to the movie, and they have never released it, and there's no plans to have it be released. It's like Song of the South, vaulted.
I'm curious as to why she would give Disney the rights to that movie. Was that part of their agreement, I guess?
Probably so.
I guess so. And it just seems like such a sad waste of time and money to have made that documentary and just have it, like, sit because Disney doesn't like it.
Yeah. Well,
And, you know, I mean, Song of the South sits for good reason. I don't think this sits for more reason than, other than, like, oh, it doesn't portray Disney in the best light, which is, like, okay.
Yeah.
that's not a very good reason. That's not what documentaries are for.
Well, I'm really curious as to, like, if other movies have had, like, this same kind of trouble. But because nobody's wife was making a documentary at the time, we just don't know about it.
I don't know. It's really hard to say, especially because Disney is really hush-hush about this sort of thing. But I do think that a lot of Disney movies go through some sort of turmoil just because of the nature of the process and the veto power that directors and higher-up execs have.
Yeah. Anyway, Emperor's New Groove was originally a movie called Kingdom of the Sun, which is going to be directed by Roger Allers, who did Lion King.
Yep.
And it was going to be basically a Renaissance movie. Like, the way they're doing it, it's going to, you know, it's going to have all these six original songs by Sting and grand sweeping animation and beautiful stuff and blah de blah de blah. And it was a lot of Prince and the Pauper was in there. It was about David Spade's guy, the Emperor, who was not Cusco at the time. He had a different name. And Owen Wilson was playing Pacha, who was young and not John Goodman looking.
And they looked alike.
Yes, and they looked alike and would switch stuff. And so there's all this kind of, like, other storytelling that's nowhere close to the Emperor's New Groove that you are familiar with. And so, basically, just, like, it wasn't working, and there was, like, a lot of different people working on it, and eventually, like, these two different directors, Roger Allers and the other guy, Mark Dennell, were kind of, like, making two different films at the time, and so there was, like, all these problems with the version that Roger Allers wanted to make, but he just made The Lion King. So, like, yeah. Disney was kind of giving him some leeway now. Because Lion King also was, you know, had a troubled production and lots of problems.
That's
and
true.
So, but eventually his stuff was kind of shut down. He quits the project. And we add lots of comedy all stuffed into the movie. And get the movie that we know today. So, I really, like... Reading all about it, I really kind of want to see the original Kingdom of the Sun.
It sounds to me, from what I've heard about it, it sounds a lot like The Road to El Dorado to me.
I could see that, actually, yeah.
That's what I think of. And I love that movie, so I wouldn't mind another one.
It's something where, like, it just enough of the original stuff still exists in Emperor's New Groove that there's no real chance of them ever making Kingdom of the Sun now.
Right.
We're like, you know, where it's clear, it would be clear that stuff existed in both movies, and so there's just stuff, stuff's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and it's interesting because Emperor's New Groove came out in a time where they were starting to make really different movies than the Renaissance film, you know? Dinosaur came out before this one, but, like, these are ones that are not musicals. And so during the production time, during those 6 years of production, Disney was doing all musicals. So right. Part of the decision was to take out all of these Sting songs. And so, you know, to go ahead and...
It makes the credits really weird because the credits have a Sting song and it's, like, super calm and nice and peaceful and it's, like, this has nothing to do with the movie that you made, Disney. It sounds really strange in context. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of disappointed that we didn't get the movie that they were originally planning on because it sounded really interesting. But on the other hand, I think that this movie is really funny and just generally delightful. And I especially like the... different way that they tackled Yzma. Originally, she was supposed to be very much like the queen from Snow White, very vain and obsessed with youth. Like Mother Gothel, I would say, which is like a really standard female villain role. Whereas this Yzma is mostly power hungry, which is something you don't get as much in female villains. So I like that. I like Kronk. Yeah. Kronk was added in.
I believe, like Kronk.
And I was like... totally worth it. Never mind. Kronk's
even like, even as I don't like this movie that much, like I love Kronk. Who doesn't love Kronk?
He's the Wiggins of this movie.
I might somehow end up liking Kronk's New Groove when we watch that, just because of undying love for Kronk.
Okay, I don't know if I'll take it quite that far, but I do really love Kronk.
I don't know. It's really interesting to, you know, having read about all this now. I'm wondering, like, how much the process of making Emperor's New Groove was, you know, that started to, like, curve Disney away from Renaissance and into what happened in the early 2000s.
That's true.
You know, it's just, like, you're kind of seeing the product of them moving away from this style of movie making and into their next phase.
Well, I think the most interesting thing about the way this movie turned out to me is that a lot of Disney movies in the Renaissance tried to focus on, like, a number of genres. It wasn't, you know, movies weren't necessarily dramas or comedies. It was kind of a mix of them. But this movie in particular is basically a comedy. There's nothing that upsetting. Like, the most upsetting thing is that Cusco might build his house on their hill, and even then it's treated really lightheartedly, and it obviously doesn't happen in the end, so it's basically Disney doing a comedy, which is interesting.
It's interesting, and, you know, I've said before, and now having seen it again, I maintain that it's not one of my favorite Disney movies. It is very funny. It's easily, like, the just straight up... the most joke per minute ratio of any movie that we've seen.
I was gonna say, because I was like, well, you at least have to admit that this is funny, because Joel has really, really easily tickled sense of humor. And, like, little stupid pratfall things will make you laugh for, like, 10 minutes. And I was like, you have to like this movie, Joel.
I mean, no, it's very funny. And, you know, I don't feel like I should fault Disney for wanting to make a straight up funny movie after making, you know, a whole decade's worth of really powerful storytelling movies.
Yes.
But it's kind of like Cars 2, where it's like, you want to make just a funny movie about a funny character, I shouldn't fault you for it, but you just made a decade worth of really great storytelling movies.
I think the contrast is a little stronger with Pixar and Cars 2. But yes, I can see where you are coming from there, yeah.
So it's something where, like, and it also came out when I was, like, there's a few points when we'll get to them when we start digging deeper into the movie for that, like, as a kid, I, like, it ruined the movie for me. But let's start with the movie.
Okay.
So we open on a sad llama.
The sad llama. He's like crying in the rain. I love the Cusco narration of this.
Yeah.
He narrates like half the movie, I guess. It depends on what's going on. But he narrates pretty often, and I think the narration is really funny.
He does.
And then we get a flashback to him as a baby in an attempt to explain to us how this happened. And that's really cute. And then we get Cusco as Cusco.
Yeah. Also, like, Cusco really sounds like David Spade.
He does really sound like David Spade.
This is the first time, like, we've had famous people in Disney movies before. Like, you know, we had Robin Williams in The Genie, and Eddie Murphy as Mushu is, like, the big ones. But part of it's that, like, he sounds so much like David Spade, and David Spade really sounds like David Spade. He's got a really distinctive voice. And the character of Cusco is kind of David Spade.
Yeah, his face is very different, but, like, his body type is very similar.
And just, to, like, his personality. Like, David Spade's not an overwhelmingly versatile actor.
No, that's true.
He kind of plays this one type. And John Goodman's kind of the same way, where, like, you know, he really sounds like John Goodman in this movie.
Yeah, and he's got the same body type as John Goodman.
He's playing a guy that looks like John Goodman. So this is like the first time where, like, I really, like, I can't get past the actor to see the character.
Probably when I first watched this, I wasn't that familiar with either of them. This would have been when I was about 11 or 12.
Yeah.
So I probably would have known them if you showed me a picture, but I probably wouldn't even connect it at the time. But watching it now, I totally agree that it was odd.
It was years later when I was like, David Spade was in that movie? What's up with that?
Oh, yeah, he was.
but now I'm like, oh my god, David Spade was in this movie. And, like, writing my notes, watching the movie, I'm like, now David Spade and John Goodman have to walk up a wall. Because I don't even pick up on the names. I'm all about the... So, but, like, it's so, like, painfully obvious how David Spade it is.
This is the first movie that we really get, like, these are famous people. Look at these famous people, which is not always the best decision.
Yeah.
I can't remember who did Kronk's voice.
Oh, Patrick Washburn.
Okay.
Who does a lot? Like, he has a very distinctive voice.
Yeah, I recognized his voice, but I couldn't place
it. He's done Joe on Family Guy.
Oh. That's where I know it from. Okay,
that's exactly where I know it from. He was a recurring character on Seinfeld as well.
Okay,
he's had some other TV shows. So,
and of course, Eartha Kitt as Yzma is pretty recognizable.
I really do like Eartha Kitt though.
She's fabulous. So, I love her immensely.
And see, that's the thing is, like, for that character and that body time build, like, he's, for Krunk, he's the only option. Even if he is famous, that's it's like, true. So no perfect. Choice there. Nope. It's just what has to happen. So,
yep. Okay, so we get introduced to Kuzco. He has his little theme song.
I like his theme song. I really like there's this one moment where, like, the carpet goes right and he wants to go forward, and, like, people have to build him a shining doorway to walk through. And that really, like, that, and plus the fact that he has a totally modern theme song guy popping out of a
little tiny Elvis impersonator.
Like, that really sets up the entire feel of the movie. And how it's just, yeah. like, it's as many jokes as possible crammed into as short a movie as possible.
Yep.
Like, that's what we're doing here. So.
Yeah, so he has this whole theme song, and he does his little dance. I like his little dance.
Yep. Theme song, by the way, that was supposed to be Sting, but Sting felt he was too old, so it's Tom Jones. Who, by the way, is, I think, 11 years older than Sting. So
was really too old his excuse. I would say he sounds a little too he's not like he doesn't have a powerful enough voice to pull off a song like that is what I would say. Yeah. I was gonna say dainty and I was like, that's not quite the right word. But yeah, so. Too old doesn't make a lot of sense. That's funny.
He bumps this old man, or he runs into this old man. And that, like, that's been shown on every commercial. That's, like, the really iconic shot from this movie is the old man getting thrown out of the window because he threw off the Emperor's Groove.
Yep.
That guy, that voice is Piglet.
Piglet, which, yeah.
Which, like, I couldn't not hear Piglet when he was talking.
I was like, how dare you hurt Piglet? That's unacceptable. Get out. Yeah, and then there's a Riverdance joke. Which was, I think, the most dated thing about this movie was the Riverdance joke. Because I was like, oh, that's not relevant anymore at all.
It's not relevant, yeah.
Yep. That's a little sad. So. Most of the jokes aged very gracefully, I thought. Like, there was nothing that really stuck out to me other than that one. That was like, oh.
Well, there's, you know, they talk incredibly modern and act modern and stuff with, like, you know, having a restaurant and having a birthday party at a restaurant and stuff, but there's not really like popular parodies or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Which and I think is where like the line between Disney and DreamWorks gets drawn pretty often is the pop culture references. And Disney tends to shy away from those. Although as time goes on, in the next couple of movies, we're going to get to some of those. I'm looking at you, Chicken Little. not that Spice Girls thing wasn't funny, but still.
Well, like, that's the thing is, you know, Hercules has been the one so far that's had the most, like, with the air hercs
and stuff. Yes,
so, I guess this one, that restaurant was the... There's that restaurant in California, like, it's a clear parody of a restaurant. But, like, parody of a popular restaurant is very different than extended DreamWorks-level parody of popular culture.
Yeah.
So.
We meet
John Goodman.
Oh, no, he has to go choose a bride first.
Oh, he has to choose a bride. I totally forgot about that. Which, I can't believe, like, I even made a note where I was like, I would watch this as a movie. Like, I'm a little bummed that there's no romantic interest in this movie.
I'm not terribly bummed that there's no romantic interest in this movie, but I totally want to see an America's Next Top Model Kuzco show.
I'm pretty sure there's an episode of the TV show that does that.
He is both my favorite Disney princess and Tyra Banks, so.
And then we meet John Goodman.
Well, no, my favorite part of the wedding scene is that, or the wedding scene, the bride choosing scene, is that one of the girls tries to punch him, and I totally didn't even notice that at first until I, like, glanced into the background and, like, see what the other girls are trying to restrain her. Like, oh, God, Disney, that's so good. Good job. A+.
Here's the thing, is, like, despite all of the, like, crazy, over-the-top, in-your-face jokes, there's a lot of really subtle, really clever jokes in here too.
Yeah.
So
it's a wide range of humor.
It's literally as many as possible.
It is all of the jokes.
So this is like airplane level jokes. It
is. I would agree. Yes. So yeah, then we get to meet Pacha, and he is helping Piglet.
Yeah.
Flag thing.
So he's been summoned by the Emperor.
Yep.
For some mysterious reasoning, and which turns out to be.
We get introduced to Yzma first, though, before he gets to see the Emperor, right? She was sitting on his chair, and then he finds her on his chair, he kicks her off, fires her,
oh,
and then
you're
he
right.
talks
you're
to
right.
her.
You're absolutely right.
I got it. So yeah, we get introduced to Yzma and Kronk first. I enjoy that this is a habit of Yzma's. Like, he mentions that she has a new boy toy pretty much every month.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's delightful. Good job. She basically wants to usurp the throne.
Yeah, well, she seems like pretty content to just like dictate and not have the title, and so it's not until she gets fired because he's like, "You're doing it again. you're using all my power."
Yep.
So it's not that's when she like has to kick it up a notch and kill him.
Yep.
So.
So then, yeah, then Pacha and Kuzco meet each other, and he explains that he wants his hill for Kuzcotopia.
Yep. Which is problematic on account of there's a whole village there.
Yep. And he's lived there his whole life.
Yep.
So
they have this dinner scene where Yzma has, I guess, invited Kuzco to dinner so that she can kill him.
Wait, we get planning first.
Because
that's
for
where
what?
I'd turn him into a flea, and I put it in a box, and I put that box in another box, and I mail that box to myself, and then when it arrives, I'd smash it with a hammer. It's like my favorite little monologue from this movie.
or to save on postage.
The roller coaster into the lab, and they get little lab coats on. And
I do like the roller coaster, but I like the other level the other lever better. That's one of my favorite, and that's like my favorite long term payoff joke in this movie.
Is the lever
that? Why do we even have that lever?
I don't know. They decide to poison Kuzco. Decide to kill Kuzco. So Kronk goes and makes dinner. I'm curious if Kronk is like actually their cook. Or if he just really likes cooking that much, because he seems to really enjoy it.
Honestly, like, I have not seen Kronk's New Groove yet, but, like, I really hope there's, like, extended cooking in it, because, like, his passion for cooking is just, like, this recurring theme throughout the movie.
It's so cute! He's so excited, and it's so funny. So, poisons his drink, and then he turns into a llama. Well, there's this whole scene where he poisons one and then can't remember which one it is. So he has to go, like, he goes and puts it all in a martini shaker and shakes it up and has to serve them drinks again.
So he turns into a llama.
Yeah.
I'm really curious because, you know, he's signaling to Yzma, please, you know, don't drink it because everything's poisoned now. And so Yzma dumps it out onto a fern and it kills the fern or the plant. And so I'm like, I wonder if that should turn into a llama.
I don't know. Maybe it's too powerful for plants.
I don't know. Maybe like, but what kind of like llama with the personality of a plant? That'd be just like, still sad llama.
That would be a very, very boring llama. It would have to learn to eat like a llama. And like,
it's like, I'm eating with my feet. No. You have to use your face hole now.
I'm extending my leaves. Why is this not working? But yeah, so then Yzma tries to convince Kronk to, like, kill him by bonking him on the head, but she does it with broccoli, which is really funny. she has two little broccoli florets, and she just keeps banging them together, and he just doesn't get it.
So he knocks out Kuzco, and then he's assigned with going and finishing the job.
Yep.
And so he's sneaking around and he's singing this little theme music for himself.
He sings his own theme music.
And so Patrick Warburton, he improvised all the humming for his theme song. And then Disney legal department made him sign over all the rights to the humming composition that he like improvised for the movie.
Oh, Disney! That sounds like exactly something they would do.
That's my new favorite like Disney legal thing.
That's so dumb
that he doesn't have the rights to the random tune that he made up humming.
Awesome.
So, and this is where we're introduced to, oh, he throws Kisco over the wall into the water. And this is where we're introduced to my two of my three favorite minor characters, which are the angel and devil Figment Kuskos.
Yeah. Not Kuskos, Kronks.
Yes, Kronks.
Oh my god. They're delightful.
They're awesome. And the way that they argue is amazing. He's like, I got three reasons. One, he's got a string thing. Two, look what I can do. And Kronk's like, wait a minute, that's... And Andrew's like, no, he's got a point.
It's so good. Eventually, Kuzco ends up in a bag on Pacha's cart.
Yes, and, through over-the-top shenanigans.
And Kronk just figures, well, like, he tries to catch him, and then he's like, well, you know, probably never see him again, so, meh. And then we get to meet Pacha's family.
Yep.
I love Pacha's family. They're so cute. His wife is really like snarky and very pregnant.
First pregnant character in
is
Disney
this
movie.
The first? Oh man.
Yep.
That's weird.
So,
I guess this is probably the first Disney movie where all the main characters aren't white.
Yeah, because they're Incan.
Something.
So.
Some sort of South American.
I guess Mulan. Mulan would have been the first one.
Yes, that's true. So second? Yeah.
So I guess so, yeah.
Or
dinosaur. Dinosaur would be second.
I mean, not animals. Jeez, Joel.
Robin Hood. Nobody's white in Robin
Aladdin.
Hood.
Aladdin.
I don't know. Aladdin's pretty white.
Aladdin is really white. That's true. Jasmine's not as white, if it helps.
So, Bambi.
Joel, those deer are totally white. I don't know what you're talking about.
So. Also, oh man, I cannot remember her name. The voice actress who plays his wife was in Just Shoot Me, and she has a very distinctive voice as well. And Just Shoot Me is TV show that David Spade was in.
Yes.
So.
It's true.
There's that. But Pacha cannot, like, bring himself to.
He's so upset.
Tell her. This is the closest thing where you get to any sort of real story emotion in this entire movie.
Yep.
Is this like, shot, this longing, forlorn shot of him, like,
it's
sitting there going, like, what am I going to do?
And
it gets interrupted by narrator Kuzco Llama.
Yep. It's true. My other favorite thing about his family is that he can pick up each of his kids with one hand.
He's
so huge in comparison to them. They're so cute. I also enjoy that his wife, when stressed out or angry, needs to go wash something.
Yep.
She was, like, really pissed. He told her that the emperor didn't have time to see him instead of telling her the truth, and she gets all, like, grumpy about it, and she's like, I gotta go wash something, and she goes to, like, frantically wash dishes. That's so funny.
I guess Kuzco wakes up now.
Yep.
And so we get the demon llama scene.
And, he, like, slowly but surely realizes he's a llama.
Yeah. And there's altercations, interactions that all basically amount to... John Goodman will not take him back to the palace unless he agrees not to build a summer home, and he decides he can make his own way back. So he starts walking away.
Good walks plan. Into the
big scary forest. And this is where he finds that this forest is scary, and then he's mean to a chipmunk.
That, is it a chipmunk or a squirrel? I thought
it was. It might have been a squirrel. It might have been a squirrel. I don't know. I was writing panthers down all this while, and then they started calling them jaguars. And I was like, well, let me go back and fix that.
It's a squirrel because they meet up with the same squirrel later, and Kronk speaks squirrel.
Okay.
He was a junior chipmunk. That was
that's the Boy Scout equivalent.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first of two jokes that I, like, really hated as a kid watching this movie.
What jokes?
Where the chipmunk blows up the
balloon
animal. And it's this one, and it's the map joke where
that's so funny, though. That makes me laugh.
Where they get back. I like them when they're running around and they see the tracks on the road, and they see that they're making tracks, and that they're just like, shrug. But I really hated it as a kid, the fact that they beat them there just because.
But they make fun of it. That's the best part.
But that's the thing, is like, that moment and this moment where, like, they are sacrificing story for the sake of the joke. The joke. And that's okay in this movie. Like, any other Disney movie, that would ruin the movie. Like, you'd break. You'd be like, unacceptable.
That's true. Yeah.
If in the middle of The Lion King, somebody pulls a balloon out of nowhere and makes a balloon animal with it.
Okay. You'd be like, nope, unacceptable. Let me remind you that we have no idea where Timon's hula skirt comes from, Joel.
Fair enough. In a barren wasteland, he does find a very green hula skirt.
With flowers and everything.
Fair enough.
You don't actually see him pull it out, I guess, but, you know.
Yeah. So, that was one where I was like, oh, that's too much joke for me. So, I mean, I honestly don't mind it terribly, but, like, those are the two things as a kid where I was like, nope, don't like it.
Unacceptable. So, Pacha, being the good man he is, comes to save him from the jaguars. And he does it Tarzan style, and so there's this whole, but then they accidentally to the get rescue. Wrapped up on a
branch. Because he swings and misses, on the backswing catches them, they get tied to a log.
And then the log falls in the water, and then they go over a waterfall. I enjoy that they realize how, like, stupid that was in their little conversation, being like, yep, going over a waterfall. There's probably big rocks. Yep.
That was the other one that was, like, in all the commercials.
That's true. Yeah.
Like, this is one, like, I really remember it coming out before it came out. I remember this ad campaign very well. This is one of the first Disney movies where I, you know, was very aware of the ad campaign prior to the movie. So, like, having seen these parts of the commercials over and over and over and over again. So, like, I really remember those. This is the mouth-to-mouth scene.
I don't think you can do that to llamas. I don't think that's how that works.
I don't think so. I think you gotta, like, press make on the chest, a seal. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, a giant llama mouth face, I don't think you could, like, make an efficient... Well, maybe, but with your character design being John Goodman-esque,
maybe.
He might can, like, get all of the mouth sealed, but I don't know. Then there's more fighting, more spats.
Yep.
But we get, like, the, oh, Pacha's a good guy at heart because he'll give him a blanket when it's cold.
It's a poncho.
Yep.
His wife crocheted it. It's alpaca. I enjoy that immensely.
I really like that scene. Like, that's really, like, how ridiculously awkward, like, standard awkward chit-chat thing.
It's so cute. And I like that there's a conversation in which someone says something about knitting and the other person corrects them and says it's crocheting because, dear God, people don't know the difference and I don't understand why.
You bang sticks together and scarves come out.
Yes, that is officially how it works, actually.
Sometimes fire, sometimes scarves. It's a crapshoot when you rub sticks together.
Well, typically, you know, if you bang metal sticks together, perhaps, a scarf
you're more
will
likely,
come out.
You're more likely to get the scarf.
Yes, yes.
But
Yzma's the Empress. I don't know how that works. I guess because he didn't have an heir, and he was an only child.
Yeah, she mentions it. She mentions that nobody but her, those three, knew that she was fired. So.
Well, yeah, but, like, she was just an advisor. She wasn't related
to Well, that's
him.
How she would, like, defunct into, without an heir, right. She would defunct into Empress mode. But, so here, like, there's this point in his eulogy where she mentions that he was nearly 18 years old, like it was on the eve of his 18th birthday. I'm like, I was going like, what? David Spade is not 18 years old. This is the critical downfall of having, you know, such a well-known actor in the role with such a distinctive voice.
Yeah.
I know he's very much not 18 years old.
That's true. My favorite part of this scene is that when the royal tailor comes in. Krunk tells him that he's 66 long and a 31 inch waist. I'm like, yeah, that looks about right for you, Krunk.
we eventually
get to the point where he reveals that Kuzco is still alive and out in the world.
So they have to go out and finish the job.
Yep. We also get some kid time.
Yeah, we go see the kids.
In my dream, Dad had to kiss a llama.
Alarmingly accurate dreams about their father.
It's true. Then we get that cute little conversation with the knitting.
That's where the awkward small talk comes. And they make a deal that he will bring him back to the palace. And Kuzco will build his summer house somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so then they walk across an incredibly rickety bridge. And John Goodman falls through and is trapped. And then Kuzco points and laughs at him and reneges on the deal because he doesn't have hands.
He falls through
and the bridge. They do some fighting, like swinging around, fighting. And the bell rings. That was something like that I did not really pick up on as a kid that I really liked. That they just had this like round one bell ring sound effect happen out of nowhere.
Yep.
And I was like, okay, that works for me. I don't know why that works. And the balloon animal, I'm like, no.
I don't know, Joel. Where does the boxing bell come from?
I don't know.
At least a squirrel could have reasonably fit an unflated balloon behind him at that point. There's no boxing bell to even be seen.
I don't know. Maybe somebody just off camera.
And then basically the bridge implodes.
Yes.
And there's this like, it's like a crevice, I guess. So like when they fall down, they get to the bottom of it, and they can both, like, they're both above the water.
It gets thin enough. The crack gets narrow enough that when they're, because they're leaning on one another, they cannot fall the rest of the way.
It's difficult to describe. There's crocodiles, and what bothers me is that the crocodiles make the exact same noises that the jaguars did. It's like, these aren't even in the same animal family, you guys. I don't understand. Does every angry thing in wherever they're supposed to be make this noise?
Yep.
Apparently.
I mean, what it's the setup is that they need to learn how to work together by basically pressing on each other's back and walking up their respective walls.
And then there's scorpions.
That's the only plot point in this movie, is that they need to learn to do
friends.
That.
Be friends! There's scorpions.
Yeah, scorpions come out of nowhere.
Those scared me. I hate creepy girl things. And then there's bats. The bats are bats.
And then
they manage to get up.
This is like defying all correct laws of physics.
Like runs they pseudo up half of a
rope flip, use the bats as help, do a ninja pose kind of and maybe sprout the power of flight momentarily to get back up to the edge of the cliff. It's ridiculous at this point.
Yep.
So, but Punch is about to fall off the cliff and Kuzco saves his life.
Yep.
And so that's important character growth, you guys.
Yay. So then we get Yzma and Kronk. And Yzma and her little carrier thing that Kronk just like carries around on his shoulders.
Yep.
I
really like the fact that she hates the jungle, and she says she hates the jungle, and then a million bugs attack her.
Yep.
Because I go camping a lot, and I work outside all day, and that's how bugs work.
Yep.
It's like, oh, you understand me. I'm going to cheer for Yzma now.
And then we find out that Kronk talks to squirrels.
Yes.
Kronk, I think, would be best friends with Bubbles from the Powerpuff Girls, because they both talk to squirrels. They're both a little slow, and they're both adorable. So,
I would watch that roommate show.
Yes, that would be a weird roommate situation.
With Wiggins as the next door neighbor.
Maybe it should just be Kronk and Bubbles are friends. Yeah.
So the squirrel reveals that he had a bad day with a talking llama.
Yep.
Which Ethan's like, oh, we know what that is. And so they get their information from a squirrel.
Next is the restaurant scene.
The restaurant scene.
Oh my god.
Which is probably the highlight of the movie.
This movie is so good. So there's a sign on the door that says no llamas allowed.
Which is probably reasonable in that country.
Why would someone bring a llama into a restaurant, though? It's so big. I don't know if it could fit through a door very
well. There's so many llamas in that part
so
of the
There's so many llamas.
And, like, they use llamas for a lot of stuff. That's like, true. You know, I could see that as in a, you know, instead of a no dogs allowed sign.
I
but,
guess
yeah,
so.
No, when I was a
it's
kid, I was
like... It's
kind of like
saying no horses allowed.
No,
like,
llamas.
What?
Like, there was a Charlie Brown special where Snoopy and Woodstock had to go to, they were trying to get into the hospital to visit somebody, and there was a sign that said, no dogs or birds. And you're like, what are the odds that our heroes would be a dog and a bird?
Why, can you bring cats in? Large
yep.
lions? I mean, like, what?
So they disguise
Kuzco as a lady, and they tell the waitress that they're on their honeymoon, and then she says, well, bless you for coming out in public. And that made me laugh so hard, because I totally did not get that joke at all as a child.
There's another joke where Kuzco goes back to talk to the cook, and this, like, other patron of the restaurant notices his giant llama butt and, like, gives Pancha the thumbs up. And Pancha gives him the weirdest look. Like, okay, dude. Whatever.
Oh, so good.
And then we're introduced to my other all-time favorite minor character, which is Angry Chef with a Vision.
It's true.
This chef character... So, like, at this point, Kuzco is complaining about his food in standard Kuzco way. And
well, I mean, it is a giant bug in his defense. It's pretty gross.
A lot of Disney animals eat bugs.
I think, I mean, the only other people we've had eating bugs are Timon and Pumbaa, and I think
that makes
relative sense.
That's three.
But, like, Pacha's totally cool with this, and he's not an animal.
I mean, but, you know, how like that's a lot for...
Maybe giant bugs are a lot easier to draw than steaks.
I don't think so. Steak is like a messed up circle.
Oh, I don't know.
Legs.
Giant bugs.
I don't know. But he goes to complain about his food, and the chef is just, like, sitting there taking it the whole time, getting angrier and angrier with his cooking. And then... Well, Kronk and Yzma have also come into the restaurant and are sitting at a different booth and are just, you know, complaining. And so Krunk goes in to talk to the chef, and that's like the straw that breaks the camel's back for this chef, and he quits, and he, you know, is packing up his bag, complaining about his vision, and the first thing he does is he empties his pot of mush gruel into his suitcase, and then he's throwing additional cooking implements. All the while, he still has one cooking oven mitt on. And he's complaining about everybody yelling at him, and he has a vision.
He does.
So I really liked him. He's my favorite character in this movie, other than Grunt.
And I enjoy that your favorite character was in there for like 5 minutes.
And Angel and Devil Grunt. So, but then this scene is like really good classic comedy with the revolving door. So Krunk takes over for cooking because he's got a passion and it's awesome.
I enjoy that he becomes a short order cook and automatically knows short order cook terms. So awesome.
Yeah. And so he's doing all this cooking, and Yzma and Kuzco are both trying to order different things in this revolving door.
Yeah.
All the while Pacha is trying to hide from Yzma and get Kuzco. And Krunk is thinking that he's making an order for one person.
Yep.
And so.
I don't know how you confuse David Spade and Eartha Kitt's voices.
It's a constant problem in my life.
I can't tell.
I avoided Batman for years.
I can't watch Just Shoot Me. It's too confusing.
So.
Yeah. But I love that they're. So Yzma finally goes back to sit down. And their technique for distracting her is by telling them that it's her birthday. So they had to do a birthday song.
There is a great shot of Yzma in a sombrero just looking frustrated.
It's so perfect.
And she gets this look a lot. There's a few more times in the movie where she just has this look. Yep. And it's really great. Yep. I really enjoy
I enjoy her face.
When nothing goes her way. She is the exact... her face is ideally drawn for nothing to go her way.
It's true. She looks awesome when she's grumpy. So then Pacha and Kuzco have a fight again. They do a lot of fighting in this movie.
A lot of fighting. And so they...
part ways again.
Yep. And this is where Kuzco discovers that Yzma is, in fact, trying to kill him.
Yep.
And so this leads us back to the beginning with Sad Llama in the Rain.
Sad Llama in the Rain. But then we get to see Kuzco and Yzma. And, No, it's them, actually. Pacha, or they get leftovers for some reason. And the tinfoil's in the shape of a llama. And I was like, you don't allow llamas in your restaurant, but you'll make tinfoil packages shaped like them?
Yeah.
But
I guess Kuzco is kind of like deciding to be a llama now.
Yep.
And
but we do get to see Krunk and Yzma sleeping though, which is really funny.
Oh, that's here. That's the thing. Like that's one of the ones where it was like a really good joke.
Yeah.
In that, there was this combination, like this way over the top joke where Giant Krunk has this
tiny tent
that covers up his legs, basically.
And skinny Yzma has this palatial tent.
So there's this, you know, giant over the top joke here. But also there's this really subtle joke where Krunk has a teddy bear and the teddy bear is wearing a Krunk hat.
I know. It's so
And so Krunk realizes that the peasant that he saw in the restaurant was the exact same one that had Kuzco's bag had landed on, and so he knows where the Talking Llama is.
Found it.
So, yep, plot point. Who would have thought there's one of those in these movies?
Yep.
And also Kuzco and Pacha make up because it's time to.
And also because the llamas don't like him.
Yeah. I mean, it's literally that just like, John Goodman's such a cool guy.
How could you not like John Goodman?
Just, he's friends, and he can't not be friends with people.
It's true.
So, they go back to the house. They say to, like, get supplies or something.
I don't know. It seems stupid.
It seems dumb that they, like, there's no actual plot point to go back to the house, but they do.
Yep.
And they learn that his relatives have arrived, who
supposedly,
are...
who are Yzma and Kronk. Yes,
and Kronk. As usual, Kronk is the best part of this scene because he's busy playing jump rope.
He's really good at jump rope.
And he's really dedicated to it. Like, he can't continue with the evil plans because he has 94 more monkeys jumping on the bed.
But so they managed to convey to Patch's wife that they're evil and she should do something with them. And I would like to state that the best kind of wife is the kind that will believe you when you say you have a talking llama emperor and tell her to lock the villains in the closet.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Again, we get another great Yzma being frustrated with Kronk because she ended up having to, like, get stuck in the jump rope double dutch.
Yep.
That was great.
They lock them in the closet and take away the doorknob. But my favorite part of this is that Yzma tells Kronk to knock down the door and he's like, I can't. It's can't carve mahogany. And I was like, thanks, Effie Trinket. That is mahogany.
That is mahogany.
I really want a gift set of that now.
So it's a really shame that that's like a scene in total darkness.
I know.
Because now all these years later, that's like a perfect thing.
Perfect gift opportunity.
Mahogany.
How dare you do that to me, Disney?
How dare you not know what movie would be coming out in 12 years?
And a random reference that's not even in the book.
And this is like, this is the other, like, really over-the-top impossible thing, because they have to have 4 kids to make this setup work, and they only have 2, so the kids just teleport, basically.
Yep. So there's... Yzma essentially gets tarred and feathered and hung up like a piñata. And yep. Then Kronk politely thanks them for having him. And says that they'll have to get together at the next reunion.
Oh, Kronk.
Yep.
So this is where the map joke comes in.
Map joke.
And I really like the first part of the map joke. I really like that.
Map joke is funny.
I really like that there's all these they see, like, you know, they throw up this map and they basically family
got
circus
lines,
style
yeah.
Show the line where they're running. And then they go into the real world and there's this giant red dashed line on the ground. And they look and Yzma and Kronk look at their feet. And wherever they step, this blue line is appearing. And they just kind of do this, like, shrug and carry on. And so they are taken out of the chase and the race back to the palace by lightning storm. Like, freak single cloud lightning storm.
Yep.
And then the long-term thing is that they beat them back to the palace just because... And yep. that like, broke the movie for me as a kid.
Like, that's funny.
I don't mind it so much now, but, like, there's still, like, residual hatred from being a child, being like, nope, I refuse to accept that one.
I'm so sorry that your childhood disappointment has reflected badly on this movie.
I don't know. I can't really explain. Nope, that one. There's also a joke in here where they're looking through the potions and there's a lion's potion, tiger, bear, and then they get to the human one and Yzma says, oh my.
Yeah.
And apparently, the director hated this joke and was like forced against his will to put this joke in.
It's
by
like a 2-second joke.
This is like bane of his existence. Hated this joke.
Weird.
And so he's like, this is like the not funny joke of the movie for him. So
this is the random balloon animal.
Yep, this is his random balloon animal map joke.
But then I really wish there was a balloon animal map joke. Those combined sounds good.
But then all my hatred melts away because back comes My little angel and devil Crocs.
Yep.
And we get to see him argue with them without them being there.
Yep.
Which is amazing. Although they switch sides, they switch shoulders for this second appearance, and I don't know why.
Probably because they forgot which shoulder they were on in the first one by the time they got this far.
But the devil's always on this, like, that's a thing, is the shoulders that they're on.
I never really paid attention.
The devil's always on the left shoulder, and so.
Is that it's supposed to be a pun about the angel being right, so it's on your right shoulder.
Oh, I thought it was another slight against left-handed people.
Joel's left-handed, for those who don't know. they just hate you, Joel. That's what it is.
Left-handed like, people have it the worst.
The first cartoonist who was drawing this, it was like, better make it on the left shoulder. Lefties are terrible. There's also, they try and crush Yzma with a chandelier, but it doesn't work because she's too skinny. She just lifts through the chandelier, which I thought was really funny.
I really would like to think that that came out with somebody being like, we should drop a chandelier on her. Aha, it would be too skinny. She wouldn't make it. And then somebody was like, yes.
Perfect. Good plan. Let's go.
Because that's the movie. Every, like, late night joke that the animators had on all the other movies that they couldn't put in because those were important, serious Disney classic animations.
Yeah, they put them in here.
They're all like, finally!
Into a this use movie. For this stupid chandelier joke. Yep.
So
then there's a chase scene, and they basically grab all the vials they can carry. They're
all
running
the
from guards. There's a big
down.
Group of guards.
And but all the guards. Oh, this joke. This joke was my absolute favorite as a kid. Was the cow.
It makes me laugh really hard. All the guards get turned into different animals. And there's like an octopus and stuff, like things that could clearly not run. And the guy who turns into a cow is like, I got turned into a cow. Can I go home for the day? She's just like, yes. And she's like, does anyone else need to go home? And like all of the other things that would have so much more trouble running than the cow dude are like, nope, yeah, I'm good.
We're good. Nope, yep, carry on.
So good.
And so we go through a lot of animal changes, like a turtle and a bird and a whale.
And the whale was good.
And so,
eventually they're on this face. Giant face statue.
Yeah, when they're a whale, they fall in the water and they drain the water, which drains out of the nose of the face, which is the palace on the side of a cliff.
And then Yzma gets turned into a tiny, tiny kitten.
Well, the all the guards do this. I really like this moment. He's like, come on, men, we all gotta die someday.
And they all just storms out and they all fall out.
Jump out.
Oh, so perfect.
And the thing is, like, at this point, you're really watching this chase scene and nothing's going right for Yzma. Like, you know, nothing's really going right for Cusco and Pacha either. But, like, nothing's especially going right for Yzma. She, like, everything is failing so spectacular. I'm like, she might be the least effective Disney villain of all of them.
Which is so weird because she's apparently pretty powerful, so...
She's got, like, all these poisons, but, like, she is just, like, nothing's going her way.
She needs better help. How is that? Or more physical strength.
She's just, like, not a very... They're not really, like, even the good guys are, like, not really scared of her.
No.
They're mostly just make fun of her for being old.
And creepy.
So, yeah.
And then they get stuck in a similar situation that they were in earlier, so they have to climb up like friends.
Yep, but they can do it now.
Oh, he turns back into a llama at some point, by the way.
Yes. Also, this other random trampoline joke comes out of nowhere.
I love the trampoline. There's this giant trampoline delivery guy, and he's delivered it, and there's this other guy there that's like, we didn't order any giant trampoline. He's like, well, you should have told me that before I got it all set up. Then Yzma, like, plummets down and rockets back up. Does she just fall? Was that it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another Disney villain falls to their death.
Yeah, although Yzma doesn't die.
No.
So, but she does lose through falling.
Yes.
I guess she loses through door smashing.
Yeah.
Because she gets hit with the door when Kronk opens the door, because he randomly appeared there.
And there was a door, like... right in the middle of the face. That was odd. And so he gets turned back into a human, and the project gets to keep his house. And
I really like this scene where he says he's not gonna build it, but like it's still nice. It's like really sweet and like actual character motivation, and
he was nice.
It's the part of the movie that feels like a sincere Disney character, Disney kind of moment.
Yes.
And there really aren't any other ones in this movie.
Not a lot of them, no.
So I really did like that scene where he says, "Nope, those mountains don't sing.
You lied to me. This is false advertisement.
Your family's gonna be stuck on the Tuneless Hills forever."
That was funny. So then they get to be neighbors, and they're like down at the swimming hole, and he's hanging out with his kids, and then his wife, first of all, has a baby. There's a baby, and also makes him a poncho with a llama on it. Aww. It's a nice ending.
And we get to see Junior Woodchucks, and
he's just been
forced to be a Junior Woodchuck.
Yep.
So, and that's the end of that.
And then there's Sting music in the credits, which sounds very odd.
So, it's not a bad movie. Like, no, it's a funny movie. It's a fine movie. And again, like, it's the thing where, like, I can't really be like, no, make the kind of movie I like.
Like, I'm still kind of surprised that you don't like this movie, because it's very much stuff that I think you would find funny.
It is funny, but it's, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, it doesn't feel like a Disney movie.
Probably not, no.
It feels weird that this is in the same lineup as some of these other movies. It also feels weird that Dinosaur's in that lineup.
Yeah.
It feels weird that, like, Make My Music's in that lineup, because...
It does. I think they should probably pare down the classics list, to be honest.
Like, that's the thing, is, like, if they could... You know, it's a risk that when they're saying ahead of time what's going in the lineup.
Yeah.
So, and it's, you know, it's a movie you should watch. It's a funny movie.
Yep.
Like, I laughed out a lot at this movie.
I did too. But it's still very funny to me, which is good. I really love Kronk. I love Kronk so much.
I really love Kronk that, like, I honestly might be looking forward to Kronk's new group. Like,
I might too. That's a little sad.
That's the thing, is like, I don't know. It feels like it's Disney sequel. And it's one of those things where, like, it seems like he'll be a really great, you know, B character that will not work
as a main character. But love him so much that I have hope.
It might work. But I'm like, you know, maybe if we can hit the, like, the Lion King 2 spectrum and not the Carol of the Bells spectrum.
Can we get nowhere near Enchanted Christmas? Is that that's
Enchanted Christmas is amazing.
Enchanted Christmas is terrible. Joel, you are the only person other than those, like, crazy hardcore Beauty and the Beast fangirls that enjoys that movie.
We'll get to it, and you'll watch it again, and you'll love it.
Watched it a couple of years ago, for the record, and it was bad, really bad.
So we'll see.
But no, we'll have to see how Kronk's new groove is. I'm very curious now.
I am very, like, I'm really curious about that one.
Because he is my favorite character in this movie.
But
I thought totally everyone was funny. Like, they utilized their characters very well for the sake of humor, I think.
Yeah. No, it's, like, and it's a movie, like, that's the big thing, is it doesn't feel like it sets out to be a Disney movie.
It doesn't feel like a Disney
classic. It's not a Renaissance film like, yeah, you know, the other ones.
It feels
are.
Like they were really tired, kind of. Like, you know, they were tired of having to uphold themselves to this sort of standard of quote unquote goodness. And with all of the nonsense that had happened with the production, it just feels like they were like, you know what, we're just gonna make this fun. Let's make fun. Fun sounds good. Fun sounds relaxing in comparison to serious face drama, romance, dying parents.
Yeah. So, I mean, watch it. Definitely watch it.
Watch it. You should watch it. So,
that's it for Emperor's New Groove.
Yep.
Next week is Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
Interesting. I haven't seen that one since probably middle school, maybe high school.
I remember really liking it, and I could not tell you why.
I remember enjoying it. I love Milo. I know I love Milo, and I know that I will still love Milo, but everything else is a little fuzzy, so.
I love Vinny. Vinny's going to be awesome. He's the demolitions expert.
Yeah.
That's what's going to be awesome.
So I guess we shall see.
Yes, next week, Atlantis, The Lost Empire. Until then, bye, everybody.
Bye, guys. Would those lucky guys turn out to be? But that unusual blend of my funny friend and